Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear.
Just a few weeks ago, Helmut and Dwight were on a home run, as usual, from 4:30 to 6, your drive time show, keeping you company. And the discussion we had was Namibia's interest in joining ISCOS, or now MOESNA, the call it the African Shipping or Maritime Transport Collabo. And shortly before that, we were talking about the global shipping industry's energy transition, discussion. Now, the idea is to shift from transporting your products that you order mostly online from, shipping is the most, bulk and cost-friendly in the world of cargo transport. If you are going to transport something on a large scale of a long distance, nothing beats shipping in terms of efficiency and affordability. Shipping is efficient, flying is efficient, yes, but it's hella expensive and it's also limited in terms of capacity. So, with that, put all that aside, and now then we shift a bit to CBAM, the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism, which is an energy transition or environmentally friendly initiative being implemented. Yeah, I think it was implemented this year by the EU, which is, one heck of a market for a lot of products around the world, and because they have the buying power. So the CBAM basically requires, or more like the idea behind CBAM, the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism, is that whatever it is that you are going to sell to the EU, you will have to provide what, especially if it's something that you produced, you will have to provide what form of energy did you produce? Is it an environmental friendly one, or is the traditional, fossil fuel? Now, if it's the environmental friendly one, you will, the reception will be very nice. But if it's not the environmentally friendly one, there will be a couple of levies just stacked on top of you polluting the environment. Now, when you start looking at it from MOESNA to CBAM, it's understandable to basically understand why I assume at this point the Namibia Ports Authority is throwing a party because of the wonderful South Korean government and African Development Bank, when I started calling it Memorandum of Understanding. It turns out it's something different from a Memorandum of Understanding. Now, what was signed last week? Last month, yeah. What was signed last month was what they called, is the word I'm looking for. It has my English is just disappearing. Not the English, general English. This is just the shipping English is the one that disappeared. So then now a few weeks ago, Namibia and South Korea signed a Green Port Strategy Cooperation letter. Now the word I was looking for was a letter of intent. Turns out it's one of those international relations collabo, like Memorandum of Understanding. Turns out Memorandum of Understanding and Letter of Intent, they're both similar. They're similar in a way that they are basically terms that are used to describe different international relation, agreements. But a letter of intent is less in seriousness, to use simple English. Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. As always, here to keep you company until the hour of 6, your drive time show. And today's Friday, so happy Friday. Now, back to shipping and energy transition. Now, Just to emphasize just how important this letter of intent that was signed here is. First of all, the CEO of Ports Authority was really fighting for his life to try and pronounce the South Korean gentleman's name, and I'm so glad he fought for his life trying to pronounce it, because I can't pronounce it to save my life. Now, the executive officer, Namport's chief executive, not Nampol, not Nampost, Namport's chief executive officer, that's Andrew Kanime, said the generous funding and technical partnership with African Development Bank and the Korean government will enable us to translate our policy commitments into comprehensive and implementable green port strategy. Now, before we just get into this whole discussion thing, let's just emphasize one thing. Guys, ownership is about money. I came across an article on social media, an article on social media where people were super pissed in the comment section. There's some kind of initiative going on in the Rongo region. And 70% of the initiative is owned by a Chinese company, I believe. And only 30% is owned by, is owned by the Namibian government. And people want to murder each other in the comment section. Well, how can they do that? Now, water, that's a need. And someone say, that's just like privatizing water. Like, okay, but here's the thing. I'm no economic or business expert, but here's one thing that I think it's very fundamental when it comes to ownership. You get what you pay for. Unfortunately, you get what you pay for. If you want a large chunk of investment, put in more money in that investment. That's my understanding of how these things work. If you are going to contribute 30%, you are gonna get 30%. There is no way someone else will contribute 70% and then give you that 70% and then they take the 30%. Like, again, no business expert here, but that doesn't make sense to me. So every time that I come across, agreements like that, before I start throwing my political, ideologies left, right, and center, the question I ask myself is, okay, if you were given 30%, how much did you contribute to this initiative? That's the first question I ask. Now, if your answer is, I only contributed 30%, then I'm not going to get into that. Now, if you tell me that you were given 30%, but you contributed 70%, now that's when I'll start rolling up my sleeves. Now, from my understanding, the way these things works is you get what you pay for. If you want 100% of something, pay 100% of it. Unfortunately, now when it comes to mostly the funding aspect of things, I don't think your government have the money you think they have. So, take for example, if they were asked to just pay 100% of it, I don't think they would afford it in a time span that they actually, implemented that whole thing. Now, that part is just something that I glossed through, but it's sort of like it's bringing me to this, Green Port Initiative. African Development Bank, and, you are looking at African Development Bank and the South Korean Ministry of Fisheries and Oceans, I believe. So, they are the ones, from the look of things, if you just look up this whole agreement, this whole letter of intent, if you look at it, most of the financial muscles is coming from the African Development Bank and South Korea. Now, as you can imagine, this is just a letter of intent. Now, according to my very, limited government school English that was aided by the internet, thank heavens. A letter of intent is a non-legally binding agreement. You are not, well, you're basically, I think it's very, you know, it's better if you just understand it literally, because I got that definition from Penn State University website. Now, a letter of intent is a non-legally binding agreement entered into by parties whose, in our case, countries and an entity, that in countries, Namibia, South Korea, and an entity, African Development Bank. Parties who intend to acknowledge their intentions to explore the possibility of collaboration for mutual interest. Mutual interest. Now that word, now that's just something I threw in. Because, well, what's the point of signing an agreement if it's not mutual, if it's not based on mutual interest? That's what all relationships are based on. It's based on mutual interest. You get something out of it, I get something out of it. If you're the only one benefiting, I'm getting the heck out of there. Unless I'm the only one benefiting. In that case, then I'm going to stay. So, let's go back again to that statement that was made. During the signing of this letter of intent, the executive officer of NAMPOT's CEO Andrew Kanime pointed out that it's Friday, guys. Mind the gap is very far. Although yesterday's home run was pretty much mind the gap, but that we did not provide that content. That content came out of the ombudsman's office. It came pre-mind the gap. We just had to basically, you know, play Namrand ombudsman. Now, if you missed yesterday's home run, oh man, please head your way to the Eagle FM Facebook page or Eagle FM app and have a good time. And also, you can just head to the, you know, Ombudsman website and just get the report, read through from page 9 and 10. Just that was our main focus, because the jokes kind of, you know, wrote themselves on those two pages. It's basically wrote themselves on the whole document, but they were more clearer on page 9 and on pages 9 and 10. Now, back to Andrew Kanime, the generous funding and technical partnership with the African Development Bank and the government of South Korea will enable us, Namibia, to translate our policy commitments into comprehensive and implementable green port strategy. We're UN member states, and we also very good attending the, you know, the COPs. Now, this is not the COPs as in a bunch of dead guys, or the COPs as in the police, or if my African speakers, this is not the COP above your shoulder. This is a COP as in a conference of parties, which is basically an energy transition, or more like a climate change mitigation strategy, which also factors in energy transition initiatives, of which let's just call it UN member states all signed up for, including us. So the green, having a green port, just something to clarify them. Yeah, well, I remember when I was in high school, the first time I heard the word greenhouse, I thought it was literal house that's painted green. So now that I thought of that, I have to also emphasize that a green port, this is not a pot on a stove that's painted green. Mm-mm. Not that type of pot. This is not P-O-T pot. This is P-O-R-T, as in a docking station at the ocean for ships. And I have to explain that part again. Not ship at the farm. No, ship, that big metal floating boat. Now that we have that, the English out of the way, because you have to understand, the English almost started a racial / tribal war in Namibia in Parliament a couple of days ago. Now, Kanime went on to say that the generous funding from African Development Bank and and the South Korean government, it will help us move from vision to action. So we've just been making plans. without coming up with, okay, you know, who the heck is going to fund these things? But anyway, part of the energy transition discussion is that developed countries help developing countries in their transition. That's basically to some degree what you're seeing taking place then. Now, it will help us, Namibia, to help to move from vision to action, from commitment to measurable impact. In other words, we have made all the plans, but we were trying to figure out how the heck are we going to fund all these plans. And we realized, oh boy, we don't have the money. And then just, you know, just a stroke of luck, a stroke of genius, or just we decided, you know what? Maybe African Development Bank is going to help here. Maybe South Korean government is going to help here. According to Kanime in that discussion, pointed out that this initiative is not something that's just you know, just popped up out of the blue, but can be traced back to 2021 or 2022. I believe he said, you know, 2021 or 2022, somewhere there. So the actions are being put in place in terms of energy transition, and especially when it comes to the energy, or more like climate change discussion. Now, the good thing about this is that the global shipping industry, especially those ones that are dealing with cargo shipping, and that business, by the way, is not doing very well right now with the Strait of Hormuz, you know, just, under the watchful eye of Iran. Not looking good. Now, the global shipping industry is looking at one thing, and that is they would like to participate in the energy transition. And this is something that, Helmut and Dwight had also had here. On Home Run, we had a whole discussion on the global shipping industry and the mechanisms and the initiatives that they are putting in place because they are a mode of transport. Pardon me. Shipping is a mode of transport, and like most modes of transport, fossil fuel is a significant part of it. And and you're seeing a lot of development in terms of transitioning from non-green to green forms of energy in a lot of modes of transport, from railway, from rail to especially cars. It's very common in cars and motorbikes, but shipping and the aviation industry is going to be very tricky to implement that. I imagine. I didn't think of that. Because for a ship, this is something that's floating on the ocean. So if you use gas, for example, green hydrogen, for example, well, you are going to be sailing very nicely. And using gas on a plane, I'm just saying the aviation industry has a traumatic event using gas as a form of fuel, because last time they tried that, it did not end well. Ended up with an explosion, and we decided to switch from gas. I think that was the initial idea was to use helium, but then because of the whole geopolitical problems, I think this was the time when yours truly, Austrian painter, and Germany did not have a lot of friends at the time when it comes to the world of geopolitics. They did not have a lot of friends, so they had to quickly switch from helium, which is, now, if you know your periodic table, the basics, and this is grade 8 physics, if you know your periodic table, helium is in group 8. Now, group 8 elements, those are the elements with 8 electrons on the outer shell, which supposedly points to how unreactive they are. That's where you find your xenon, your argon, and everything in there. Now, the thing is, that switch from helium to hydrogen, all you just have to do is have a very nice, interesting, more like a, just have... now, if you look at the... What about this? If you look at the... if you look at the position that helium is on the periodic table and the position that hydrogen is on the periodic table, you will understand why the Hindenburg disaster took place. And you will understand why the initial idea was to use helium, which is helium is in helium is in group 8, but it's just as one cell with two electrons. Now, enough of those, two electrons. But now, electrons are supposed to indicate how stable, especially the outer electrons are supposed to indicate how stable an element is. If an element has two electrons on the on the outer shell, that well, it's stable. That's where helium is. If it has 8, it's also stable. So, the initial idea was to use helium, and because of the whole geopolitical divisions, the Germans did not have very, they didn't have friends at the time, and the friendship with the much of the world was a very tense one. So they had to switch, quickly switch from using, from needing to use helium to using hydrogen, and then, we have a Hindenburg disaster in history. Now, as you can see that most, if not all, modes of transport are working towards transitioning towards a green energy in the, towards green energy. And the shipping industry is also going in that direction in terms of energy transition for environmental, because of environmental concerns. So the discussion of, that's Dwight. So, this is the reason behind this initiative is a is an interesting one. It's an interesting one in a sense that if you factor in things like things like the COP conferences or the the CBAM or the the global shipping industry discussion of energy transition towards green forms of energy in their modes of transport, and this letter of intent that was signed last month by the African Development Bank and Namibia and South Korea.
It's actually just Namibia and...
Namibia and South Korea.
Yeah.
The African Development Bank is just signing a check.
The African Development Bank actually is sort of like the... what you call it? They were... You know, we've got this weird thing where countries to countries... I know, Hamid. I always have to come in with the critical... analysis of a discussion, how we approach our development. So if we know that, for example, Namibia's big three, and I always reference this, the big three development partners, Germany, the EU, Germany, China, the EU, and then you put South Africa fourth, but South Africa is technically number two or number three or number one technically in that regard. Okay, it's the top four development partners. South Africa deals directly with Namibia because Namibia deals directly with South Africa. Mm-hmm. However, when you look at, for example, like the Germany and EU one side and China on the one side, they have, firstly, with regards to China and Germany, Namibia has direct sort of like, our international relations already means that we can talk to each other directly. And, it's such a well-established relationship, in both those two fronts that you technically don't even have to wait for example, for China to propose something to the AU or for China to propose it to SADC before Namibia can buy into the same project. Meaning you first pitch it to the SADC heads of state or to the AU heads of state platform, and then for them to understand, they all come back to Namibia and say, hey, listen, guys, this is the new agenda for 2026. The AU, under the AU auspices, we've said yes to something, which technically also means that us as Namibians, we technically don't have any sort of like buy-in, public stakeholder engagement discussions. Zero. However, If it is based upon the relationship pathways that Namibia has with China, Namibia has with South Africa, Namibia has with Germany, those channels are already clear, solid, and direct. However, South Korea is obviously not the heavyweight that China is. And South Korea obviously first started this, what's this thing's name, that they call, this sort of like, I don't want to say green shipping, but it's actually sort of like the port strategy developer, green port strategy program. The green port strategy program forms part of a broader proposal that the South Korean government had put up. Remember one of the resources that I shared with you, Helmut, specifically the one that comes through that I got from the South Korean government website. And the second one, which was the PowerPoint presentation regarding the presentation that they made at a UN level regarding what this port strategy is. So there you can see what South Korea is doing. South Korea is proposing to the world, buy into my idea at a multilateral platform. And then it cascades down to everyone else. People who, or companies or countries who wish to buy into the strategy, then it cascades downwards. But there's another nuance to this thing as well. Remember our future fuels discussion?
Shipping?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the whole aim. Yes, a port, harbor, / seaside installation has a definite economic purpose and has a definite economic benefit, as well as also impacts specifically on the environment. And
we all have that one thing only we do, that unique thing that makes you real, just like Windhoek beer.
For some, it's that secret handshake thing that makes you feel like family. For others, it's that brave hold my beer thing when the moment calls for courage. For friends, it's that fun podcast and cooler box thing where the best memories are made.
And for Windhoek beer, it's that barley, hops, and water thing. Let's raise a Windhoek beer for that real thing only you do. 100% real beer for real people. Not for sale to persons under 18. Drink responsibly.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Welcome back. It's 5 o'clock on the dot. A home run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, your drive time show. So, green shipping.
So, the green shipping of the future of fuels discussion that we did last month, which literally came just before this particular South Korea Namport / Namibia engagement regarding a green ship, green port strategy. So, what this relationship contains, as outlined in that joint statement that I shared with you, Helmut, regarding, so what did the people sign? So what they signed was development of the strategy for Namport and two other particular sort of like advisory components that the South Koreans will play a part in terms of helping the Namibia Ports Authority in terms of the green strategy to be implemented on the land scenario, technically, because a port is technically installed on land, unless you've got a floating port somewhere offshore. We're not there yet, or as yet.
I don't even know if you can call that a port offshore.
Because then it's not a port, it's technically just a floating, just a flotilla.
It's
or
just a floating platform that you have going on there.
Exactly. Now, where this all star stems from, Elmut, so I'm just opening up the resource of the Korean government. So they proposed this idea back in 2020, in the height of COVID, definitely, because unfortunately Korea was also one of the hardest hit countries. But they called this the 2030 Green Ship K promotion strategy. Because if you ever go and look up where does the Korean Green Port strategy come from, you get to this resource. Now, the Koreans highlighted this as this is the first national plan for the development and popularization of green shipping. Let me rather just put that because I think this website was just translated as is. And this primarily is a strategy to dominate the global green shipping market. Let me say this again. The Koreans are coming with, we are here to help you. But we are here to dominate.
Also,
to
look
be in control.
Also, look at it this way. The Koreans have a significant, not just a shipping, but also shipbuilding presence.
Yeah. Helmut? Yeah. I mean, Korea, just like Japan, are experimenting above and beyond with hydrogen engines. I've not... The last German car maker, the last two German car makers who experimented with hydrogen, the reason why I'm throwing the hydrogen, you know,
engines in
into this conversation is obviously looking at where the industrial research and development is currently at. Mm-hmm. So Porsche went and developed that green hydrogen facility in Chile, and also tested a green hydrogen, a Porsche Cayenne running on hydrogen in the Chilean desert at the same time. But it was a joint venture between the Chilean government and the Porsche car brand. Then, what's its name? BMW went and tested like fully functional hydrogen running engines and built, I think it was an X5 or an X3. Specifically with its own particular gearbox, but technically you don't have a gearbox in hydrogen,
yeah,
because the hydrogen guys were not. It's going to be full. It's like full automatic
electric
situation. Yeah, so they are not. It's not the mechanical that we know of the manual gearbox as we know it.
Yeah.
That obviously was a mechanism to sort of like how you unlock the power, the phases of power that the car's engine releases, meaning you want to build up pace, build up speed, so you'll need to go through incremental moves, which are the shifts in the gear,
yeah,
to achieve the speed that you wish, the speed limit that you wish to achieve. But the developments that I've seen since here in Namibia, okay, not in Namibia, but since we announced in Namibia the green hydrogen strategy in the country, were all tied to a scenario of, where is this new resource going to be used? And back then, very few of us knew of the Toyota Mirai. Yeah, the Toyota Mirai. But the Mirai was only functioning in California. It wasn't even sold in the rest of the US market. And the US market is a huge market for Toyota.
Yeah.
And the Toyota Mirai after this whole green hydrogen development obviously popped up since 2021 heading this way. The Mirai was finally being sold in Japan after a while. But here's the thing also. Toyota Japan was also experimenting in terms of how they secure their own hydrogen source for their own car. Because they know if they have to approach their government will say, but you know what, you're asking me to deal with this particular resource, and we've already got such very few space to maneuver in. This resource, this new energy source has its own particular benefits, but, you know, the scenario is, how do you install it now like you've installed the petrol stations already across the country? Because it's very difficult, for example, in places like Japan, China, and South Korea, for you to drive anywhere. Now, while the hydrogen strategy, or the global hydrogen strategy is obviously picking up and popping off and doing its own thing.
Yeah.
Because the Europeans obviously also, they've already rolled out...
CBAM.
No, not CBAM. There is, even the Europeans have, even the European companies have reservations about CBAM, Helmut. And remember when you and I did the World Bank's development report, that massive book, which is literally like, what, a 500-page thing.
Mm-hmm.
Even there, that particular document highlighted how CBAM technically unfairly gives a economic advantage to the EU over Namibia, over a country like Namibia. Namibia's aim is to develop. Namibia's aim is to reach the level that many of the EU members have reached already 100 years ago. Now, if you have to apply CBAM to a Namibian component, Helmut, now you go and explain, let's say you go sell your cattle. Let's say Meatco. I'm using Meatco as an example.
Yeah.
If anyone from Meatco is listening, it's just an example. Let's say you now, as a cattle farmer, Helmut, go and sells your cattle. You go and auction it off to Meatco, and then Meatco has to ask from you, Helmut, what what is the carbon footprint of your animal husbandry activity incorporated in how you looked after your livestock? Firstly, you'll ask me, wat se goed vraag jy my?
No, the generator that you used to, you know, to drill the water from the ground.
For the water.
So are you using the manual one that does not emit any carbon dioxide, or using, a diesel one that's pumping carbon dioxide in there?
And you're buying diesel often, and they ask you, what are all the processes that you have on your farm or on your communal farm situation? And then you'll still tell the, and then they'll still find a carbon footprint somewhere.
Yeah.
Which means that immediately, Mietke will face a penalty.
Yeah.
Because they will have to report what the functions you did that looks like a carbon footprint, which also includes the dust that the cattle kick up as the cattle are walking in the bush.
What sorcery is that?
Exactly, Helmut. So, the moment you highlight that particular discussion and you obviously now give your feedback, you report now to Mietke. Mietke now reports with every batch of shipment going to the EU of red meat. They tally that on the other side, it tallies up. So they don't, it's nothing that happens every end of the month.
Uh-huh.
They tally it up at the end of a financial year. And then they communicate back to Namibia. And then they tell the producer that's obviously selling on behalf of you, yeah, we won't pay you so much because you are still, you are actually, your carbon footprint is actually increasing. So that means you that were selling something on an agreed price that faces the penalty of being deducted later on, just looks weird. So it looks like it sounds like a weird penalty system as well, CBAM. Even though I've done something on CBAM, we've spoken about CBAM last year as well, and the year before as well. And, we've had it at various phases. You know, we looked at it at various phases. And obviously we also had the particular, discussions that came through regarding CBAM's installation, phasing in. But getting back to the shipping talking point, the Koreans are ultimately, in the scope of things, they are actually driving a heavy hydrogen conversion, Helmut. Hydrogen hybrid and hydrogen conversion. Have you heard of the car that Hyundai built? The N74 or something. That is a complete hydrogen engine from start to finish.
No.
But it's still a concept car. Because the car has been tested. Even,
it's not up for production.
Yeah. Because they obviously still want to see if the fuel will be made as widely available as you find petrol and diesel. So to also the new age military hardware that the Koreans are also developing. I don't know if you've seen the Hyundai tank. The thing that has symmetrical sides. It literally looks that concept drawings that you sometimes see in architecture or in design.
You know, it's very square-ish.
Yeah, it's got a lot of, sort of blockish sides.
Yeah.
The engine of that thing
mm-hmm.
is not a conventional petrol diesel engine.
Really?
Yeah. So the Koreans are obviously in their neighborhood of things are doing something regarding industrial change. The shipping part is literally what they're stating is that for Korea to literally lead the green shipping market across the world. Now, here is our biggest focal point that we highlighted back in the fuels of the future talking point of the IMO is that shipping has a footprint, carbon footprint annually of 3% globally. The global carbon footprint of shipping is 3%. Now, the nice thing is, just my last point, Helmut, Namport signed a letter of intent with the Korean government.
Yeah.
A letter of intent. The nice thing, and this is the first time in my life I'm actually appreciative of this particular kind of agreement, it's not a time-wasting MOU. An MOU is vague. An MOU just says we are in cahoots in the thinking or in the principle. We love the idea, but there's nothing concrete. There's no obligations on the parties. There's no responsibilities. There's no time of action to deliver, to take possession of, to start stuff.
Yeah.
Zero, Helmut. But a letter of intent literally means there's an agreement on the table.
We have to do something.
Or them as the Korean government is saying, we are help, like what this, that statement said, we are helping you, Namibia, achieve these first three things.
You know, now that you have made the, made the statement of from the look of things, the Koreans are, you know, placing themselves at the forefront of green shipping industry. The good thing is they already have a significant presence in maritime transport, especially in cargo.
Mm.
And not just that, but also the building of these vessels. They're heavily involved. That brings up one of those million-dollar questions, especially that I like to ask a lot of us Africans. Everyone has a plan for Africa except Africans. But not just that solely, but I'm looking at that from the angle of, the same way that you see the South Koreans, they're basically at the forefront of everything shipping and energy transition. You see that China is somewhat doing the similar, the same thing, but they are heavily involved, and they are light years ahead of the energy transition and electric car making.
Actually, China is leading in the electric car making.
I learned that, I think that was last year, I believe, when the New York Times, put up an article that asked the question of, can the world make electric car batteries without China?
No.
That's
a comprehensive no.
It's a capital no.
Maybe if...
there's no maybe.
If you threw to the Japanese, yeah. it would be a discussion about scale.
One thing that a lot of countries, I think, did not realize until, I think it's safe to say, a little too late.
Yeah.
When everyone was just busy focusing on the, let's make war economy, China was positioning itself, especially in the tech industry, especially in electric car making, not just in the making of cars itself. They went all the way to, they basically spread themselves across the entire supply chain. From mining to the time that the chip is made and it's put in the car, and the car being made, they are involved in all of it.
Mm.
What would you say, as Africans, just any African company, what is it that is industrial that we are involved in to that level?
Nothing. Okay, if you're South Africa, maybe something. If you're South Africa, I can only reference South Africa. And that's just one of the biggest headaches, Helmut, why we've got Namibians that find fault with SACU and with South Africa. They just don't see past the picture of SACU. They make SACU as sort of like this evil entity that it is, but you're receiving money from SACU. I still don't understand. You know, if you didn't receive anything for like 10 years, then you could have said, Neman, this is a rubbish thing. When must I be a part of this engagement? But every year they've been receiving money from SACU. And guess who pays them the money, Helmut? Guess who pays them the money?
South Africa. Okay, look.
You know, after yesterday's discussion, and after Tuesday's discussion,
yesterday and Tuesday were fire.
Yesterday and Tuesday were on fire, because that was now Namibians on Namibians, grilling each other on a massive spit pry. But
yeah,
things start becoming ridiculous, Hamut, after a specific point, when you have a perspective in the country specifically where a mechanism is, what is that word? Is painted in a light of this is an evil perspective. This is an evil mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
But no one is giving an equally beneficial, let's call it alternative, to the discussion. And then at the same time, for example, we can't even, try and champion something like African tourism to Namibia, because Namibia's tourism is not geared to Africans. Namibia's tourism.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Namibia's tourism is geared to Europeans and North Americans and even Asian markets. Namibia's tourism is not even meant for Namibians. And that is a bare bones reality. That's a fact, as a matter of fact. Hence the reason you have some Namibian business people that would say SACU is an issue. Who said SACU is an issue? Why are you targeting the easiest thing that's giving you money? Every year, and today now I went to a Robin Sherborne presentation. We'll obviously do that in the coming week or afterwards. And there I saw a big, a massive chunk, a chunk probably bigger than the diamonds, the diamond earnings that keep dwindling every year, mm-hmm. that we keep hearing of. And every time you ask yourself the particular question, you find fault with some particular mechanisms that are actually still giving you money. The first thing is that you've got to ask is, what can I do to increase this thing's earnings potential? You start thinking like an investment.
Mm-hmm.
How do you approach something like an investment strategy? Because here's the thing, Helmut. Yes, roads can help move things, because you would need the trucks and the stuff running there. But the big question of the matter is still, now, are Namibians moving things on these roads? Or is it Zambians, Zimbabweans, Angolans, Botswanans, and South Africans moving things on Namibia's roads through to Namibia's port facility and from Namibia's port facility heading back to their destinations? So the big picture is about, are we moving things on these roads? Because I'll tell you today, Hamoud, still, and I still have to be proven wrong, you can't eat a road. However, if you get a job in a function, in a market, in a sector that utilizes a transport medium, let's say that road facility, that pays your salary, meaning you're the driver that has to go and deliver the beer or the retail produce or the other goods, you directly see your money being made. You see how your money is being made. Now, it is not your fault if you have a directorate of mines who trust me, bros. It is not your fault, Helmut. When you are doing your job every day, when you get to a scenario like what the Namra discussion of yesterday, deciding not to understand where powers emit from and that they are functioning under limitations of a specific set of a specific article in the Constitution, and they still don't know how to dispense. Then further from there, because you can easily see with what we saw in that report, that it's easy potentially for Namibians who sit in SOEs to literally overstep the line in terms of saying, we have some sort of an authority or power to make a judgment call that impacts the economy. So,
look, if you are saying that, there's a part where one of them say that, Namra's role is to basically participate in employment creation. I mean, it's, look, your heart is in the right place, except. Your heart is in the right place.
Why didn't you say this yesterday? Why didn't you say that yesterday?
Look, I get it. Your heart is in the right place. Yeah. Participate in, employment creation of the youth.
Yeah.
Except you can't then use that as an excuse to just start whimsically changing stuff, because that's where they were like, we totally understand you changed it, but which policy do you follow?
Yeah.
We totally understand you want to combat unemployment, but you still have to follow the procedures in place.
And the procedures are your procedures, and you don't even understand your own procedures because you did not follow your procedures.
That's the most painful part.
And they were not even supposed to use an external consultant.
Well, to be fair, Ombudsman did know that.
And Ombudsman pointed it out. They were not supposed to appoint an external.
That's after they snitched on themselves. Can we focus on green shipping?
No, but
give Namara a break.
No, but really, Hamoud. And I'm sorry. I'm now technically inducing this from Namara into the rest of, let's say, the national strategy of Namibia.
Yeah.
Hamoud, why don't we see African governments exporting industrial concepts to the rest of the world? Why are we recipients of industrial concepts? But then we go and sit with different templates of industrial concepts. Like, for example, say, Namibia signed now on, Namport is now signing on to this. Which includes a, let me just read them out because I just had to find them. A comprehensive green port policy,
yeah.
A green port 10-year investment plan, and a green port implementation roadmap. That's what the Koreans are going to help us with. The overall aim is obviously now to collaborate, between Namibia and Korea. So the Namibia's ports are positioned to become greener through renewable energy adoption and reduce emissions. Immediately that should signal to you that's part of the green hydrogen strategy of Namibia. That the ports will be cleaner through enhanced air and water quality management. So that obviously means this is just an additional sort of like environmental, function, environmental protection function or environmental management function. Then safer through strengthened climate resilience. Once again, Namibia's NDCs, more competitive through sustainable innovation. We don't know what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Would this be like AI running, what's those things? That take off the containers from the ships.
The cranes.
Those shipping cranes, yeah. And more responsibly through protection of ecosystems and communities. Does that mean it's just a glorified CSR program? We'll have to see. So, obviously the first thing in the roadmap is the policy document, ne? But we are being guided. We are always in this infantile, a baby, a position. You just have to continuously take your formula. Every time it's a new formula because it's a new country. Every time we have to deal with. Today we're getting another formula. Have you heard of the Russia Namibia Business Forum happening early today?
No kidding.
Yeah. So we're getting another formula there. We are just getting formulas. They're very different. You'll have one arm bigger than the other arm, one calf muscle bigger than the other, or underdeveloped than the other one.
You know, one thing I've come to learn: we are not really into these formulas. We are really into the money that's coming with these formulas.
No, the formulas are almost the money. that's why you will have. That's why you will see the baby is eating for one arm, or the baby is drinking for one leg.
Uh-huh.
And one ear is bigger than the other ear because they listened a lot better here because the money was better here than this ear because this ear is slightly more underdeveloped because it came with a credit extension, but it didn't actually come as like a grant. It was just, you know, money that was tied with something else.
Yeah. Look, there's one Kenyan, TikToker that asked a very funny question with regards to what's going on in the Middle East between the US, Israel, and Iran. That, looking at how, you know, wars, you can look at it from World War One, World War Two, and how things can easily spiral out of proportion.
Mm.
When you see that maybe it's just two countries that will start bombing the heck out of each other, and then, you know, then you have the rest of the countries are divided into, you know, into allied ship type of thing. And the joke he made was that a lot of countries, if what's going on in the Middle East was to come to that, knock on wood, it doesn't, because I don't have the energy or the mental or the financial capacity.
You should see the conversations, Helmut. We are not far from that.
That's the fear. Now, here's the thing. The point he made was that if things were to get to that, a lot of African countries would not know who to side with especially the Kenyans. We have borrowed money from everyone now,
especially the Kenyans and especially the Ethiopians.
Kenya would go west really fast.
Oh man, Helmut.
Yeah.
the conversations we've got lined up now for listeners. It's going to be scary stuff about this war.
Look, when it comes to governance, I think it's safe to say that governance-wise, you know, on a government level, I would say Kenya is most likely to side with the West. But the thing is, the people on the ground, on the other hand, that's where you have somewhat of a whole different ballgame. And interesting enough, this is something that you see in a lot of Western countries and a lot of Western influence, you know, countries with, you know, with Western political and economic influence. Mm. You see that a lot of, you know, a lot of countries from the West and those with a Western economic and political influence, they are very, they will side with, you know, with Western governments. But the people on the ground from, you know, from both most Western countries to Western influenced countries are looking at this war in a very, in a way that makes sense. Like, okay, look,
logical, or not?
Yeah, very logical. They are looking at it from the, you know, from a very logical standpoint. Like, look, I want to blame Iran. But who bombed the first?
And you know what's the worst part?
Thanks to social media.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing you highlighted at this point. Reason being is because when we look at, like, for example, this particular green shipping, green port strategy discussion, it makes things unsettling. You know, new ideas, Helmut, get put to the back of the bus because now, the US and Israel went and decided to start a conflict on a Saturday morning, but I was still asleep that morning.
So was I.
I was still asleep. And
it was Saturday.
And I just heard, Dwight.
Commercial break.
ShopRite's price roundown is here for 1 week only, where saving is winning. Save up to 40% on homeware, small appliances, outdoor and groceries. Like 24-litre Essentials mini oven, only 900 Namibian dollars. And 470ml freehand coloured base, can-shaped glass, for only 15 Namibian dollars each. Offers valid until 15 March 2026. Only at ShopRite.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Twenty-nine to six. Home run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, and
I was still with Dwight.
Yeah,
I was asleep still that morning when my name was being shouted in the house because, there's like an inside joke we have that in the family, you know, democracy was being delivered.
Yeah,
that's just what the Americans say when they go to war with other countries. They say we must deliver democracy.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys think I'm joking, go and look at the speeches of George W. Bush. Go and look at the speech. Go and look at any other speech. Even Barack Obama's speeches was about democracy.
Yeah, in Libya. Look, the thing is, that worked when most of the information about what's going on in these conflicts on these different countries. So you can look at it from Desert Storm in 1991 to the invasion of invasion of Iraq. Desert Storm was invasion of Iraq, and in 1991, and you can look at it again from 2003.
After the Americans gave the Iraqis chemical weapons against the Iranians.
Yeah, they basically...
In 1984, was it 1984 or 1986?
Somewhere in the 80s. They basically prepped up Saddam to fight Iran, and then halfway through, Saddam changed his mind, and he became a bad guy, you know, weapons of mass destruction, blah, blah, blah. Now, look, you are a friend until you...
blah, blah, blah.
Look, it's very funny, you know, when you look at it, you know, when you look at it, but the thing is, you know, narrative was very easy to control back then because there was no social media.
Mm.
But now, it's kind of difficult to lie through mainstream media because, well, a lot of people will be looking at what's taking place, you know, what they're being told by mainstream media and comparing it to people that are literally on the ground in Dubai. In Dubai or anywhere, you know, or anywhere in the Emirates and the surrounding countries. And, you know, there are people that are basically uploading and these are the people on the ground. Oh my God, there has been explosion here. Oh my God, there has been an explosion here. This facility is damaged. So narrative becomes very difficult to control thanks to social media.
Yeah.
Now, when social media first popped up, everyone's biggest fear was misinformation, only to find out mainstream media has been misinforming this whole time. The disappointment. Mm. Now.
Doing its own thing.
I know.
I never could understand what the Americans and the Europeans were complaining about their own sort of like conventional media outlets. Until I one day sat and I was like, these guys were telling the truth. Specifically when it came to anything regarding Israel, Palestine, and what was the other conflict? And about the Russophobia, you know, the anti-Russian sentiment. You know, and then, you know, I was like, bro, why do you guys, and the anti-China sentiment?
Yeah, it's the same Islamophobic, the Islamophobic, sentiment. It's the same thing. I was watching that nonsense on CNN. Two fully grown men thought the reason why the U.S., you know, the U.S. and, you know, the U.S. and Israel, you know, the U.S. and Iran are always at odds with each other is because it's because Iran is full of, Islamic, extremists who hate, the exact word he used was, because they hate our way of life. Like, what the heck did these guys mock?
But when you go and read in the history of Iran, modern Iran, and you start from Mossadegh, you literally start from the Second World War.
Yeah.
Then you go like, it's because the British were there.
Iran does not, enjoy, throwing these bombs because they hate, Western miniskirts way of life.
Yeah.
It's not that, but if, the fact that a fully grown man believed that, that's when I was like, oh my God.
It's the most emptiest loaded statement you can ever make.
Yeah.
But we're obviously digressing now because we're moving away from green shipping.
Even though
green shipping was now impacted because of a Saturday morning.
Well, speaking of green shipping is supposed to be a environmental friendly initiative. And what's going on in the Middle East is not very environmental.
The worst part is they're bombing each other's oil refineries.
Oil refineries.
Oil rigs happened was this week. The one oil rig was bombed.
Wait, was that an oil rig or an oil...
refinery.
Tanker.
Which one?
There's one that was bombed on the side of Iraq.
In this week, ne?
Yeah.
That was a tanker. The one that was bombed last week in the one Iranian city was a refinery. Do you know how much pollution happened there, Hamid, in that one bomb?
Yeah.
The people said they were experiencing black rain.
Holy cow.
That's how oil, literally from the oil fumes, were going up into the atmosphere and coming back, causing some sort of a meteorological event. That they were experiencing black rain in the city.
Where's COP 31 gonna take place?
Iran is not even going to the World Cup.
COP 31 is gonna be nice.
Where? Where?
It's taking place in Turkey. From the 9th to the 20th of November.
And Israel almost bombed Turkey this week as well.
Why?
Primarily because of this discussion. This Iran discussion.
So Israel is just bombing everyone now.
Helmut, the discussion I've planned for us now regarding this conflict.
Yeah.
I will first send you a video of a guy who made a prediction back in 2024, this Professor Jiang, and how he literally is explaining today. And the presentation he did was a classroom lecture of his that he gives at one of the big universities in the US. And he gave this presentation. And word for word, Helmut, not word for word, scenario for scenario. The only scenario that still has not come through, ne?
Yeah.
That has not happened, is the scenario of physical boots on the ground, American soldiers invading Iran, or Israeli soldiers invading Iran. But we are so close to it, because another guy that I saw earlier today on the platform Neutrality Studies said, and he's an American, he says, looking at the kind of military strategy thinking happening currently in Washington, he will not be surprised if they actually fall for that trap. I will send you the video of Professor Jiang. It happened a full year ago. You will be surprised, Helmut, at the scenarios from pre Donald Trump inauguration till today. Till like today. If you look at the themes being popping up, you'll be scared about how this guy predicted everything just from his classroom lecture. Now, where does this put green strategy? Green shipping? In the dustbin. Do you know why? Do you know why it's in the dustbin?
Yeah.
Donald Trump is moving air defense systems from South Korea. He's moving air defense systems from South Korea. Why does South Korea need air defense systems? Because of Rocket Man.
Because they've been told there's a happy guy next door.
Yeah, Rocket Man to the north. On the other side of, what's that famous river?
Okay,
The divide that divides the south and north.
Okay, now just put a pause on that. You are right, the green energy discussion, or more like energy transition discussion, or climate change mitigation strategy discussion, because of flying the jets alone.
Mm.
You have to understand that these jets that are being flown are using, they are burning a lot of fuel.
Yeah.
And, you have all these, all these explosions mostly are taking place because of what? All these missiles that are being exchanged, they are using fuel.
Yeah.
And, now, if you look at all the shipping vessels that are being threatened, now insurance companies, especially in the UK, they just told the guys they insure that look, if you take a risk of using this at the Strait of Hormuz and you get bombed, we're not insuring you.
Mm.
Yeah. So now everyone is scared to death.
Do you think they'll go tell their government?
Well, everyone is scared to death. They're basically telling you, well, you have been warned. If you get in there and you get into trouble, we are not covering that insurance.
Do you know what's the worst part, Ned? Do you know what's the worst part? Before coming here, I watched James O'Brien. He's this one British radio personality that I love watching. We are technically doing what he does. He does it without like having a script, because he just reads like that morning's newspapers, and then he comes and does his 4-hour show there in London. And he started off with a discussion of because his hypothesis is no one can trust the thinking of Donald Trump.
Okay, now that's my biggest problem with modern geopolitics.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is not thinking.
And that's what everyone is saying.
That's a very stupid narrative, because
it depends on what mood the guy wakes up today.
Yeah.
Literally.
Look, the reason why making a stupid foreign policy decision as a president is that everyone that will be looking at that will be looking at how many levels this decision went through.
Mm.
I think I totally agree with one analyst who said that the previous Trump administration had a little bit of order, because there were people that could stand up to him and tell him, no, Mr. President, this is wrong. Mm. But then I think because, you know, in this administration, he decided to some degree surround himself with what they're being called, what's that, yes men.
Or sycophants.
Yeah, like, you know what, whatever he says,
yeah,
everything, you know, just fault. You are right, Mr. President, which is a terrible idea in any leadership. If you don't have anyone to challenge you in any leadership position, that's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, like his Secretary of Justice who went and called, she called a senator in a House committee meeting, House committee oversight meeting. So what they do is, what we don't do is, what I would want us to do in Namibia is call ministers for review meetings regarding, let's say, something that their ministry is doing. Let's say if it was that thing of the Auditor General's report that we did on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Ne? Then you call the Minister of Mines, come sit here. This is what your colleague is finding out that your ministry is not doing. Why is your ministry not working?
Mm-hmm.
Why haven't you implemented this risk assessment policy and framework?
Yeah.
Then you give answers. So Pamela Bondi, which is the Secretary of Justice for under Trump, she goes and says for one of the committee members, one of the senators, a woman, that the woman made a, because the woman senator asked a question of, why is the United States giving, Israel so much leeway in terms of what's happening there in the Middle East?
Yeah.
and that this is continuously absorbing American military presence into these conflicts, either through direct financing or either through, you know, soldiers and stuff like that, or hardware. And then they then get into a sort of like a close argument situation, and then Bondi makes an assertion in the direction of the senator by saying, yeah, she's making a anti-Semitic comment, but.
We all have that one thing only we do. That unique thing that makes you real. Just like Vintuk beer.
For some, it's that secret handshake thing that makes you feel like family. For others, it's that brave hold my beer thing when the moment calls for courage. For friends, it's that fun podcast and cooler box thing where the best memories are made.
And for Vintuk beer, it's that barley, hops, and water thing. Let's raise a Vintuk beer for that real thing only you do. 100% real beer for real people. Not for sale to persons under 18. Drink responsibly.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukurile oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ningefa Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honoreta Time, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bali, No Heali, Ileco, Berewa, Nora Hetatu Natu, Bali O Hetatu Batatu, Oma Felane, Eagle FM, the Eye.
Welcome back. I'm just looking forward to the SDG report for 2026.
Helmut, do you know what's my biggest concern?
Look, we are really trying here with our, you know, green port strategy with the South Korean.
But do you know what's the worst thing we're doing?
What's that?
We're highlighting the biggest risks that can derail this green port strategy.
What's that? The conflict,
the various situations.
Okay, look, the whole air defense transfer.
Yeah.
Why?
Because they are running out of ammunition. Have you not observed a weird thing happening this past two weeks since the war began? You've not seen like images and reports from Israel. How Israel is the impact that Israel
being decorated,
by Iranian rockets and Iranian missiles and drones.
Yeah.
Why? Because obviously the IDF propaganda machine is literally blocking off certain particular reports from coming out. I've only seen one from major rockets that have impacted, that have hit civilian targets in Tel Aviv, the capital.
Yeah.
And then they couldn't even they couldn't even stop that report, because I saw it and I was like, oh, okay. So the Iranians are hitting you guys.
Yeah, I think I came across one video that actually explained. I think that was that Al Jazeera CNN that were explaining how that's happening. One missile is easy to stop because you know, the US and Israel has a very you know a tight air defense system.
Mm.
Except the Iranians figured out the best way to basically overwhelm the defense using cluster munitions.
It's not, supposedly it's not even tight enough.
So it's overhyped.
It is overhyped.
There is it's overhyped to justify the cost. That's money laundering 101. Because it's a ridiculous amount of money being invested in that, what, in the whole.
Hamid, we actually saw it last year already. Remember the 12-day war with Iran?
Yeah.
That's where we saw specifically what was going wrong with the air defense systems.
Oh yeah, that is started with the 12-day war. What's it with the Middle East and 12? I mean, 12 disciples. 12. But anyway,
I'm with you starting again.
Okay.
Okay. So what we saw then in last year was the Iranians would, if the Iranian, the Israelis would obviously shoot like 3 or 4 rockets to Iran, and then the Iranians would then try and block it, but many cases I see, the Iranians just accept the hit.
Yeah.
It's not like they're even trying to shoot down the rocket, because it seems like they don't have an air defense system, per se.
Yeah.
But when the Iranians shoot, or when they fire their volley, they shoot like 20 rockets at a time, not 4 or 5. So then the Israelis would be, you know, scrambling their air defense and firing, 10, what you call it, interceptors. And then those 10, and here's the sad thing. You have to fire 5 and then 5. This is what one guy explained now today as well on that neutrality studies platform.
And
that
all these things are burning fossil fuel.
Exactly. And all of these things
get climate change, because these guys have.
And all these things technically just rely on the single most important commodity that greases this global economy over. Now, the reason why I'm holding back on including or sort of like over-explaining from that Professor Jiang's lesson,
yeah,
is specifically, Helmut, is that you can literally see that you and I, we will, and the fellow Namibians, we will suffer in the next 3 months. We can't even run away from it because we can see it coming. And you know what? The only people who did not plan is the rest of the world. We didn't plan for this.
Yeah, because we're not idiots. Look.
Now you ask, now Donald Trump is asking, what's his name? Putin, to sell Russian oil that has been sanctioned for 6 months, sitting in boats.
Mm-hmm.
In tankers.
Sell it to who?
Into the global market. So he's rescinding, he's relaxing the sanctions.
Eesh, the Middle Eastern guys are not going to like
this. But then they are accusing the same guy, Putin,
mm-hmm,
of helping the Iranians with targeting.
Well, the guys that are accusing Putin of helping the Iranians of targeting are the ones that have been helping Ukrainians to target Putin. I mean, the whole geopolitics.
Do you see the hypocrisy? do you see the hypocrisy here?
Geopolitics is the dumbest.
It's just dumb. Instead of just saying, okay, sorry, bruh. Instead of just one guy telling the other guy, I'm sorry, bruh. You know what? I'm sorry. You know what? I'll come to you. We'll have a braai. We'll have a beer. We'll sort this out. We chat it out. And then we shake on it.
Okay, the best solution, if you ask me, would have been all they had to do was take the Iranian president, take the US president, put them in a boxing match like UFC and tell them to basically battle it out. There you go, problem solved.
But here's the worst, here's the downside, Helmut. That's why I keep holding back on this piece of discussion. It has to be our talking point next week.
That's going to be awesome. Now, yeah. Anyway, don't ruin the Korean thing for us. Now,
look, I would have loved it also if Namibia and Korea's international relations, grew a lot.
Plus, I mean, we went to, actually, that was the National Planning Commission.
Which had nothing to do with this discussion.
They went there for
a PowerPoint. A one-sided PowerPoint presentation.
Went there for a lecture.
which they could have done through a Zoom call. But they wanted to be Muslim.
You and I are never getting a job in the public sector. But look,
at least we can run for president in one other way.
Yeah, at this point, my fear is we have a whole lot of information, and when it comes to when it comes to the public sector, but I think we still don't have enough. So parliament, parliament, ombudsman. Auditor General, these reports are not, they are not many enough. Please produce more. just produce the report.
Yeah.
And put it on your website. We'll take it from there.
We'll definitely, or just go and table them in parliament.
Mm-hmm.
That at least shows everybody it's public.
Yeah. And just make it public and then...
It will work from there.
Yeah.
Don't worry. The nice thing is, Helmut, that obviously in the green development of side of things, it's looking good for a country like Namibia. I say it's looking good. Obviously, I'm saying that with major limitations attached to that word, to that phrase, looking good.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm bringing us back to the first point that I made before we gallivanted into the geopolitics of today, being that we as Namibia, the baby formula, we have to standardize the baby formula we're receiving through this international cooperation discussions. Yes, the government of Korea, and I'm not criticizing them, I'm also not sort of like displeased, even though, my analysis sounds like I'm critiquing someone. They obviously went and presented this to the International Maritime Organization. The IMO said, "Hey, this is a lovely template, Korea, that you've developed. You're a member nation. Kudos. Good stuff. Let's just, copy and paste." Now, this then obviously sees Korea then visiting various countries in the world, and specifically development countries, and saying, "Hey, listen, learn the Korean method specifically of green shipping." Now, this specific strategy, we have to look at how it plays a pivotal role for Namibia. Why, Helmut, do I say how it plays a pivotal role? Here's the first particular roadblock that we automatically have to understand. Namibia has an issue specifically with Shark Island, which is part of the planned port expansion under the Green Hydrogen Program.
Yeah.
Shark Island is also specifically a heritage site and also a negative historic site in Namibia's colonial history. Now, I bumped into one of the spokespeople there of the NTLA at the particular oil and gas discussion that took place last night that was hosted by the IBPR. It's a guy that I also interviewed here once or twice here on Eagle FM, but he's now based now in Windhoek. He came back from Kitmans, but he's now here in Windhoek. And he highlighted specifically that the Shark Island discussion and the planned port expansion by Namport in, under the green hydrogen strategy is still a bone of contention, specifically for the council of traditional leaders of the Nama Traditional Leaders Association.
Yeah.
Now, under this discussion of the green port strategy, we have to try and understand what does this mean for Lüderitz. Now, right now, dear listeners, I cannot explain to you. Because I tried asking, I asked the question directly to the guy, but I knew what the answer is primarily because, Helmut, there are still human remains in that in the waters around, because Shark Island is most an outcropping, a piece of land that extends from the shoreline. Now, there are still human remains because it has been documented what the what's that doctor's name, Tochman? That medical guy that came here that was such a violent guy during the genocide period. It's because they literally just, if the captives passed away, they just threw you there, right next to where they were held on the piece of land, just there into the sea. Now, obviously, that means that your bones are not washing away.
Mm-hmm.
And if a body was dumped into the sea just there, right next to Shark Island, still with its chain on it, you know, back then they had the chain and ball. You got like this massive metal chain with this massive metal ball that prohibits you from running, attached to your leg, and then you literally can't go anywhere. Or you've got the shackles, which was the previous format of handcuffs, and you can't move anywhere. Now, I still have that particular sort of like forensic report that was done by those two NGOs that assisted the NTLA and the OTA in that particular sort of like they used satellite photo imagery or satellites to do like forensic, what you call it, that thing, where you try to look into soil to see what is below the surface of the soil, and even into, you know, like a couple of meters, 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 meters deep. I might be conservative because it might be deeper, but they could identify that there were, you know, that there were specific kinds of evidence of that there was a concentration camp on Shark Island. Now, that still plays a pivotal role in the conversation here of what a green port strategy looks like for Namport. Because you and I, us as fellow Namibians, but before we continue, got an ad break.
ShopRite's price rounddown is here for 1 week only, where saving is winning. Save up to 40% on homeware, small appliances, outdoor and groceries. Like 20-liter Essentials black or white manual microwave oven, only 800 Namibian dollars each. And 12-piece spring flower or finesse white dinner set for only 199 Namibian dollars per set. Offers valid until 15 March 2026. Only at ShopRite.
Welcome back. So this is a very interesting time to have the green initiative discussions, considering what's going on in the world. But here's the thing. Especially in the Middle East, with the military confrontations, bombs exploding everywhere, and there's a lot of fossil fuel being banned in the form of both modes of transport being used in the bombarding, in the bombing the heck out of each other, and also the missiles themselves and the stuff being set on fire, including oil tankers, which is just a massive level of pollution. It's sort of like taking back the already few steps that were, climate change mitigation strategies. But this whole, discussion, more like, this whole, economic union between Namibia and South Korea seems to be focusing on, we know all this negativity with regards to, to this whole energy transition and climate change mitigation strategies taking place in the Middle East. We're not going to look at that and then just throw in a towel. We'll just look at that and go, you know what? We can still focus on making progress in terms of energy transition. But boy, oh boy. Right now, from the look of things, it's more of a, call it a gamble. gamble as in there is not much certainty being provided with regards to the direction things are headed.
Yeah. The certainty is obviously the thing that we need, because it's pivotal that we need to know whether the environment is conducive enough. Doesn't matter what Donald Trump tries to do, the environment is not conducive enough currently.
Yep.
However, what we can only share with our listeners right now, primarily what we aim to achieve specifically through this Green Port strategy that we've signed up to specifically.
Yeah.
Now, the other aim, Helmut, also comes through in the format of what this Green Port strategy actually, where it's positioned in the global scheme of things. Now, it also happens, or it is also part of the overall International Port Development Cooperation Program. Once again, also being championed, obviously, by the Korean Ports and Harbor Association, as it outlines itself here, or Harbors Association, as it mentions itself, which also is obviously in conjunction with the Korean Ministry of Fisheries and fisheries and something else, because it has to do obviously with the ocean, yeah, Ministries of Oceans and Fisheries. That's the Korean ministry's name. And they primarily lay out the discussion here that when you look at this International Port Development Cooperation Program, this is about having special cooperation affiliated to Korea's Ministry of Oceans and Fisheries. And primarily the main aim, specifically, is that an investigation process has to be done and research on ports, the various ports around the world that sign up to this particular program, what particular analysis or research comes through from this. Now, the reason why, just before the ad break, dear listeners, why I referenced that Namibia will have a little bit of a roadblock, and this is the roadblock that is in existence, because I wrote the article as well, spoke to somebody from the NTLA just last night, because I bumped into him after a long time after speaking to him, and I asked him, you know, so is he still involved with the Shark Island commemoration and all that? And then he highlighted once again that there's obviously a clear, particular sort of like, there's still a little bit of a standoff between the impacted groups, specifically about Shark Island, and the government. And I'll say it again. He highlighted specifically that there is still sort of like a point of tension. And the said point of tension revolves around the planned port extension in Lüderitz under Namibia's green hydrogen strategy. So that's where the point of tension exists, which is the standoff. This point of tension is literally positioned around the discussion of how do you treat a heritage site alongside industrial development and industrial applications that are to be included and that are aimed at specifically erasing evidence of the particular atrocities that were committed in Lüderitz and in the surrounding areas of Lüderitz, and how things look from there, and you know what the pathway from there would be. So when looking at the position of what the International Cooperation Program the International Port Development Cooperation Program, obviously that Namibia has signed up to, the you know, that the Koreans have developed, you can immediately see in Namibia's particular scenario of just Lüderitz what the problem is going to be, what the point of contention will be. So the main particular other scenarios, obviously, that we can look forward to that between this relationship between Namibia and Korea would be that further processes of collection of data, analysis of said data, and the generation of information on port construction technologies will be then the next particular step. This will then also lead to the performance of safety inspections of facilities for investigation, design, supervision, technology, and the related technology to be applied to the port construction when this port development has to take place. And then finally, I'm just saying finally, but you can lump this all together. This would be design criteria, standards, and professional specifications for the construction of this or the upgrading of these port facilities in this green port development plan. And then interpretation and sort of like they say meditation, yeah, but I think it's mediation in the case of disputes related to port construction technology. You can see sometimes see when things are just like ChatGPT. They say meditation here, but it's actually mediation, mm-hmm. how I understand it. So,
mediation in the event of disputes.
Of a dispute. And I cited Ludritz primarily because Ludritz is still a hot potato. There's still a point of tension. There's still a standoff.
Okay, but I'm hoping before the, since it seems to be like the time frame being put forward is a 10-year plan. Yeah, 10-year
period. So we're looking at 2026 to 2036.
Yeah.
50 by then.
I'll be sugar daddy by then. Look, the thing is, that's illegal. Very illegal.
No.
I won't be.
No.
I won't be.
Do you know what's the worst part? Well, the actual sugar daddies don't call themselves sugar daddies.
Well, look, if you don't want it to keep happening, just call them sugar, peri-peri daddies, or just something bitter. Oh, devil's claw daddies, something like that. Because we just keep calling them sugar, and well, guess what? You're just giving them free PR.
What I'm saying, Helmut, is the actual people who are actually the sugar daddies don't go around calling themselves sugar daddies. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, boy, do I have a story for you.
What, did this person actually call themselves a sugar daddy?
Oh, no, not that. It's a whole different one. Just slightly. So here
how did we get to sugar daddies, Helmut?
Oh, yeah.
No, we're looking at time frame for this whole
thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So 20, somewhere around 2036. So, in the event of, in the event of a dispute. So, this is bringing up for me the whole, Hyundai assembly plant fiasco.
True.
Yeah.
Well, maybe.
In the event of a dispute.
Okay, but we already know what our dispute will be. And the dispute won't be with the Koreans. The dispute will be now with Namport.
This is with regards to Ludritz.
Yeah. The dispute will be with Namport.
Yeah, from, okay, so for a 10-year strategy, I think this is something that, if you ask me, should have been discussed before bringing in.
But that was not. But that was not the next level of things that we've got to see.
Yeah.
You know, Namibia, we sign on to things, and I heard this today. We go and promote, for example, like the free tertiary discussion last year. It was going to be announced. Yeah, universities will be free, and then afterwards we're trying to find. We're trying to develop the sums. We're trying to develop the sums, the mathematics.
I realize it's not mapping. Like, on second thought, it's subsidized.
It's 7 months there of Namibia having to define the mathematics to apply what Namibia announced.
That's why I like to say, sometimes it's important to basically, I think, sit, do the math first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but that was what the economist Robin Sherborne highlighted. Go and do the sums first.
More often.
Use templates. Go look at Denmark, my goodness. Go look at Finland, my goodness.
Yeah.
And then you try to see what you try to do from here. But yeah, there's also another concern, Helmut. Even in that regard of the education side of things. I mean, to hear a comment at the Circular Economy event of Wednesday that I attended, from a European, that we Namibians have to stop with this thing of children leaving at grade 10 level.
elimination method.
Yeah, the World Cup football, the knockout football situation.
Yeah.
Which is in logical terms, it is not a logical thing to apply. And to still have this thing active for 20 years later, 26 years later, because it came in into 2000 when in my grade 10 year.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were announced, yeah, you guys are going to have knockout football for this year. We were like, what?
Why
remember, not? This is your last chance. Last chance to make it to grade 11. We were like, what's going on here?
What do we do?
What do we do? Why didn't you guys apply to the previous grade 10s? No, because it was still under development for them. Now, why are you applying it to us for?
Speaking of knockout football, it's a knockout football for home run.
Too, yeah.
You know, and then come in, you know, in comes business and economic segment with David. Okay, 10-year plan, Greenport. I think mid-2030s will be, if the Middle Eastern thing does not escalate out of proportion, Namibia would be looking at some, interesting economic progress from, the oil and gas, the green. Really? How we're planning on balancing those two. Can't wait to actually see that. But until then, you all have a good weekend. And please do stay tuned for business and economic segment. We meet for Home Run, of course, Monday to Friday. That's next week. But for Mind the Gap, that's on Sunday, 11 to 1.
And you'll catch me guys again on Sunday morning, 5 to 7, on my Sunday morning take. Obviously, I will be preempting the conversation that Helmut and I, we still have to agree if we're going to have this conversation on Monday, maybe. Because if I preempt something on Sunday, it might force us into it on Monday.
It can force us into on Monday. Not a problem.
Yeah. On that note, guys, stay tuned.